Good, how are you?
Talk Radio.
Hello, this is John.
Nope, can't do that, John. Too late. Please, I need everybody not to say anything. Mute yourselves, because now all we see on the screen is John Smith, and I cannot go live with John Smith's name on the screen. Please, go on mute. I don't know how to take that off. Okay, 3, 2, and... Hi, this is Ann McNeil, the master builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And yes, once again, we are bringing you my investing story on behalf of Better Investing Organization and Corporation. We are excited again today because we have another special guest. But before we talk about our guest, let's talk about Better Investing. Better Investing is a not-for-profit organization that was formed in 1951 with the idea to encourage and educate financial investors, just individual investors. And to date, they have impacted over 5 million individual investors through the stock analysis tools and the educational investment information, workshops, seminars, and investment clubs. But we are not selling any products. We're not selling services. We are all volunteers, Iona McNeil and myself, and we are here to share investment education. We are not day traders. We're not stockbrokers. We are volunteers. Volunteers here to bring you investment information that will help you have a better quality of life in regards to how you invest your money and your time, because time is money. And so with that story, I want to introduce you to my co-host, Ms. Iona McNeil, and then we're going to tell you a little about our guest. So Ms. Camilla O'Brien is an operations and financial not-for-profit professional. I'm going to let you, Ms. O'Brien, share with us your story, but I'm first going to introduce my co-host, Ms. Iona McNeil. How are you today, Iona?
I'm well, thank you.
A little bit louder. We can barely hear you. I know you're excited. So I'm going to turn the show over to you.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Ms. O'Brien. I think a lot of people that know you or people that want to get to know you should know you as the Focus Spender, correct?
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
Okay. So let's take you back to your earliest memories of money. Could you walk us through what those were?
Okay, so my earliest memories of money, I think, has to be getting ready to go to church. My grandfather would always leave me offering on the table, so I would go to a Seventh-day Adventist church, so Saturday mornings he would leave 50 cents, and so 25 cents was Sabbath school, which is like Sunday school, and then the other 25 cents was for like the main offering. So that was my little allowance. And then when I got a little bit older, he gave me a little bit of extra money. So then I had money to give at church, and then I had a little bit of spending money for myself. So I think that's my very earliest. Oh, and I know I used to also like do little chores around the house for my cousin when she didn't want to wash the dishes, and I would do it for her, and she would give me change. And that's my earliest memory of money.
So it seems like you've been tithing since you were a baby.
Yes. Train up a child.
Train up a child, exactly right. And it also looks, it seems like you've been entrepreneurial since you were young, taking advantage of opportunities to make money when you could.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that, but I definitely wasn't. I wasn't going to the store or doing anything with the money, so I would just get the money and just keep it in my piggy bank, and I would just leave it and let it grow and grow and grow. But I honestly never thought about it like that, but yes, you're right.
And I'm glad you mentioned piggy bank because we like to speak about piggy banks, and I know as the world turns and money becomes more digital and people don't carry cash or carry change like they used to, piggy banks are really a fundamental part of childhood and just allowing kids to really practice the concept of saving and having it being tactile. And watching them, you know, watching them, seeing what they do with money. Do you remember who gave you your first piggy bank?
It definitely would have been my grandmother. So I grew up with my grandparents, and I know my grandmother definitely was a saver. She was not an investor, but she, when she immigrated to this country, she worked. She saved. She bought a house. So I got all of my saving tips from my grandmother.
Okay, perfect. And let me ask where your lineage is from.
Oh, gosh. So my mother's side of the family, so like my grandparents, my grandmother was from Costa Rica, and my grandfather was from Panama. My mom was born in Panama, and then my dad's family was from Trinidad, or is from Trinidad, and that's where my dad was born. So they met in New York City, and here I am.
Awesome. Okay, great. I wanted to ask that question, too, just so that people that identify with you culturally can also give you a quick shout out because we've had so many different guests from all walks of life. And I think everybody, and we all think everybody's story is important because there are going to be some people that have immigrated here. There are going to be some people that were born poor here, that were born of privilege here. Yet in all of that, they still had to kind of make their way.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, you know, putting a little money in your piggy bank and, you know, doing extra chores when you could, when did you even find out about investing, especially since you probably weren't introduced to it, you know, in your household?
So I think the first time I even heard of anyone talking about investing, it was probably, again, from my grandmother when she was like, I would never put my money in the stock market because, you know, she was born, I guess, around 1912. So
Depression.
So exactly. So she was not comfortable with investing. But then I would hear, like, my aunt talk about it. My father would always say, like, oh, you should invest. But I didn't really understand exactly what they meant at all. And I think either in college or right after college, I read the book. It was a Susie Orman book called Young, Broke, and Fabulous. And,
that's pretty recent then. Well,
no, she might have had a new edition because this was like way back in 2000.
So this was
a while ago. So I think that's when I remember reading that book, and I also remember when I was in college. I don't know if you're familiar with this organization called NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers. So I was in that organization, and I remember someone came and they did a presentation, and they were talking about, well, you know, if you start investing today, you know, if you started at 18 and you just did $100 a month, then you would have $1 million by the time you turn 65 or whatever. And I remember I was 20, and I thought, oh well, I missed the boat. I should have started 2 years ago.
Exactly.
So then when I read the book.
I missed the boat.
You didn't miss the boat completely, but I remember thinking, dang, I wish I started earlier. And then when I read the book by Susie Orman, I still didn't know what to do, but I was getting a little bit more information. And then I don't know if you've heard of Primerica, but one of my friends, she was in Primerica, and she came to my house and gave me a little presentation, and she said, do you want to open our IRA? And I said, yes. I didn't even care what anything looked like. I just wanted to invest, and I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know where to start. So I just.
That was amazing. I'm glad she offered you that and not life insurance.
She probably did. She probably will listen to this. She probably did. She probably asked if I wanted to, like, become a financial advisor. And I'm like, I don't know anything. You don't want me to.
America has always been good for that. You know?
Exactly.
But they are training them, recruiting as they sell.
Exactly. We were, like, 22. Like, no, we should not be selling anybody anything.
But that's actually a really good age. So, you know, your friend comes and she's, you know, doing her business, selling you this product. She offers you. Was it a traditional IRA?
Ooh, it might have been a, you know what, I don't know.
It was an IRA.
It might have been a Roth.
Okay, and you said
I don't remember. I signed up, like, on the spot.
Okay.
Yes, no sales pitch needed, I just did it.
Right. Well, that is amazing because, you know, and in a lot of our journeys, we may not know how to get there, but as long as we're continuing to follow the breadcrumbs,
mm-hmm.
you know, from book to seeing the opportunity when it presents itself, and then knowing that it's important enough to act on it. Because I think sometimes we come across those type of opportunities, but because we don't know what it is,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, I don't need that. And
exactly.
then, you know, that's what a regret 10, 20 years later. Oh, somebody did come to me.
And the funny thing is, like, I think, you know, from reading other stuff later on, I knew pretty quickly that it probably wasn't the best type of IRA, but I just knew I needed to do something. And I was like, you know what, it may not be the best, but it's better than doing nothing.
Yeah, and that's not to be understated. You know, I was thinking about actually this podcast that we're doing right now and how we started doing this in March,
mm-hmm.
but we just got onto the Apple, the Spotify, the Anchor platform last week.
Oh, wow.
And so I was just thinking, oh, wow, I'm so glad we didn't wait to get it all right, you know.
You know what's funny about that? So I have a YouTube channel called Focus Sender, and my sister the other day, she texted me and she was watching one of my videos, and then she said, I was looking at some of your old videos, and wow, you've really come a long way. And I said, just think if I had just waited. Like, I'm so glad I didn't wait. I just started where I started on my laptop, no lights. Curtain is at my back as my backdrop. I'm just glad I started as opposed to waiting till everything was perfect, because to this day everything's not perfect. So I'm just glad I started.
Now I'm so glad you said that too, because I want to hear more of your investing story. I know mine resonates a lot with you. A lot of people look at me like, oh, somebody mentioned, oh, well, you were a genius, you know, because you started when you were elementary school. And I was like, no. I just knew I needed to get started. So if that was buying one share of stock with the birthday money or the Christmas money,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't like managing large portfolios, but I knew it was important enough because I saw the same graph that you saw
mm-hmm.
and, you know, ended up being surrounded by people that said, oh, if I had only started when I was your age,
exactly.
I was like, this 25. You know, I mean, just little things, and you just got to start where you were. And I always remember, because I know you've seen the graph where you have the three different people that started different ages. And I did a whole anecdote around that. And the anecdote really is the person that starts much later always said to themselves, well, I got to get this promotion first.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, once I get this house and I get this extra, you know, next thing you know, 5 years, 10 years, and what you really don't, I mean, it's almost like life insurance. The longer you wait to get it, the more expensive it is.
Exactly.
You know, and not realizing that, you know, you could have did that 10 years ago with $10.
Exactly.
And now you're trying to scrape $1,000 a month, you know, just because retirement is now in your view.
Exactly. Excuse me, Iona, you need to tell our audience between the two of you exactly what you're describing, because they may not be familiar with the time value of money chart.
Well, we'll definitely get to that. I want to go back to Camilla. Once you started your IRA,
mm-hmm.
What else was your next move? Because I know you have another story about how you got into debt, and I want to definitely hear how you got out of it. But, mm-hmm. Let's continue down your timeline.
Okay, so I started the IRA, I guess, when I was like 22-ish. And then when I was 25, I went back to grad school. So at that point, I stopped contributing. Yeah, I didn't contribute when I was in grad school because I needed all of my extra money to live and, you know, pay tuition. And so when I graduated from grad school, the one good thing, I ended up with about $70,000 in student loan debt, but it could have been a lot more. I chose, unlike a lot of my friends, I chose just to keep working. I didn't work quite full time, but it was so close to full time. So that way I was able to pay my rent without taking out extra student loans to live off of. So during the time that I was in school, I wasn't investing in anything. I'm not even sure. I don't remember if my job even had a 403B or 401K program because that just was not in my brain. So then when I graduated from grad school, for the first 6 months, you're on that deferment period. It was great. I was like, oh, I have all this money. It's fabulous. And then that first bill came, and I thought, oh, wait, this is more than I expected. So that's when I decided I was investing in my 403B at the time, which is just like a different version of a 401K in a sense. And so I had to turn it down a little bit. I just put in enough to get the company match. It was about 2%. And then my sister gave me the book, The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. And I just went all in. Because before that, I never really thought about paying off debt in advance. I don't even think I thought it was an option because it just...
Most people don't.
You don't think of it.
They give you this...
schedule.
Payment schedule. Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, you know, at the time, I was 27, and I was like, by the time I finish, I'll have kids, and they'll be going to college. So if I don't want to be paying off my student loans for the rest of my life. So I'm glad my sister gave me that book because then I was able to, like, get just, like, side hustles, and I was using my tax refund money. I was doing all these things just to make additional payments on my student loans, and then I was able to pay off all my loans in 3 years. That was a rough time in my life. It's not easy, but I just did not want the debt. So I just got to do it.
But you did it.
I did it.
Yeah.
And so after that time, then I started, you know, I started investing regularly. Nothing crazy. I just, you know, increased my contributions to my retirement account maybe to about 5%. Nothing crazy. But then one day I read this article. And this guy, he was also debt-free, and he was talking about how much money he was investing every paycheck, and it was like $1,100. And then he was not going for the $1 million, he was going for the $5 million. And I was like, that's a lot of money to invest. Like, why would you do that? But then in my brain, I thought, wait a minute, who says you only have to do 5%? And who says you only have to do your retirement account? So then I started thinking, well, if I was making all these additional payments to my student loans, and now I'm not, I have extra money. So do I spend the extra money just going on vacations and shopping and just, you know, living life, or do I put a lot extra into my investment account? So then that's when I decided, okay, let me look into this IRA again. Let me see what the max is. So then I saw the max. Like, okay, I can do the max. How much should I do my investment, like my 401k, my 403b? I increased that. And then I started looking into different apps. Like, I looked into Betterment and M1 Finance, Dash, and I started saying, okay, let me see what happens if I open up a taxable non-retirement account and try investing on my own. So that's really how I got so heavily invested. That's how I got so heavily involved in investing.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. And not that you have to share your age, but I'm just trying to put it all in perspective.
Oh, I'm 40. 40 years old. Just turned 40.
Let's take it back to, you know, you started your Roth, let's call it a Roth IRA, at 21, and you did that for a few years. So what age did you go to graduate school?
I was 25. I was 25 when I went to graduate school.
So you were able to do about 3 to 4 years of that before.
And the funny thing is I was only doing $25 a month or $25 a paycheck. And it was to the point where it was coming out automatically. I think it has to have been a lot. It was coming out automatically. I was not thinking about it at all. I just let it happen. And then one day I looked at my statement and I saw that I had gotten dividends. I was like, what is this? What are dividends? And so I started looking into the fact that I was getting a dish, like even after I stopped contributing because I was in grad school, I was making money on my investments. And that's when the light bulb went off. Like, oh, this is where it's at. This is how you make money in investing.
I am so glad you took the story there, because I was going to ask you,
mm-hmm.
how did you feel when you stopped it? And you did the whole grad school and you did the whole student loans, and then you went to look back to see, wait, what? Because
usually
it's a way moment uh-huh. where you look back and they're like, oh, wow, it did that, and I didn't even do anything more?
That was the eye-opening period when I realized that even though I wasn't putting any money in, it wasn't just, you know, the value of the stocks that I had that were just increasing, but it was like they were increasing. I was getting dividends, I was getting capital gains, and then it was reinvesting itself back into the account. So my account was growing without me doing anything, and I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Why did anybody tell me?
Now, Camilla and Ione, I want to say this. I need for both of you to be mindful. We have people who have absolutely no idea what a dividend is, what capital gains are. So can y'all just break it down just a little bit so that those people can really understand the points you're making?
I'm going to be smart at the mouth and say check out investopedia.com. But go ahead.
So a dividend is basically So companies will pay out dividends to investors based on the number of shares you have. Not all companies pay dividends, but, you know, many do. And so a lot of times people, when they're looking for stocks to purchase, they're looking for dividend stocks because they know they'll make extra money. So let's say Apple, because Apple is in the news right now. Let's say Apple pays a dividend of $2 for every share that you have. So on a quarterly basis, or on an annual basis, they'll pay you 2 times 10. So if you have 10 shares, then they'll pay you $20 just for owning those shares. So you're making money on your investment.
So a dividend is making money on the money that you invested.
Exactly.
So for those
money on money.
Absolutely. For those individuals that are trying to keep up with this conversation, then you know that when you work hard for your money, you want your money working harder for you. So look possibly into getting stocks or investing in stocks that may give you back a dividend. So now y'all can continue on the timeline. Thank you.
Some people call it Raxo.
That's what was popping in my head. I'm like, no, I'm going to be professional.
Are you being politically correct?
Exactly.
And I'll be the Raxo sidekick for today. Yes.
Got it.
So, yes, I I'm glad. I wanted you to go first because I wanted to hear yours. I am going to share. I know I'm always flip, you know. But, you know, to really put it in perspective and to drive home the point that Camilla's making, anytime you put your money in some type of financial institution, they more often than not are going to pay you interest, right? And so I use the example of, you know, you have 2 cousins because we're all black and we all have family members that come to us say, hey, can I borrow such and such and such?
Mm-hmm.
And you immediately do a character assessment about if you're going to get that money back, right? And so that's the same approach that we have about investing. You know, we do a character assessment of the company. And if they can, and they have the ability to basically pay us interest on our money, which, well, like you mentioned, is in the form of dividends. Now, you do this with your bank, but I don't think a lot of people are actually engaging with their bank or their credit union and having that conversation of, if I open up this savings account, what is the interest that you're going to pay me to have my money to sit here, which you, in turn, lend to people through mortgage, through a car loan, through student loan, at a much higher rate of return. And so I think when, like you did, you start to read certain books and understand how money works, you can start to ask the critical questions of, where is the best place for my money? Where can I put my money that is going to give me the greatest return? And, you know, through your experience, you started putting it in a retirement account, because I'll go through that, a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, a 401k, a 403b, which meant that Camilla probably worked at some type of nonprofit institution.
A lot of nonprofit work.
Yeah. So all of those are terms for retirement accounts. And the reason that an IRA even exists is because there were companies that you could work at, but they did not have a retirement plan for you to participate in. So financial institutions allowed you to basically start your own retirement plan. And traditional just means that the contributions are being taken out of your paycheck pre-tax, and Roth means you are making contributions to your retirement post-tax. You can look up the definitions about that.
You can look it up, and I literally did a video on this exact topic this past Sunday on my
channel. Okay, so shout out to the video. Which was what, the 22nd?
That was Sunday.
Yeah.
No, Sunday was the 23rd, because my birthday was the next day. It was the 23rd.
Yeah, my uncle's birthday was the 22nd, which is Saturday. Okay. Yeah, so check out, and let's take a moment now and talk about your site, your brand, your message, because I want to hear about where you made that turn. You started to get stuff right for yourself, and one thing I wanted to say from the earlier story is, you know, once you were living lean with the extra payments or the student loans, it's very easy to make that shift if you have the awareness and the knowledge. Let me now take that money I was paying off my debt to grow and make, you know, more money and give me the option for early retirement. So kudos to you for making that switch. I do want to say that, because those are definitely the stories that we want to hear, we want to bring on. A few weeks ago, we had a guy on that, you know, retired at 55.
Oh, wow.
And was able to retire on his birthday.
Oh, wow.
And his wife got set up younger than him and was like, I'm good, I'm retired. You know, it's
so good to me.
To be able to have that option, I think, is definitely a blessing. Talk to us about how you got started with the Focus Sender.
So the story goes that I used to watch a lot of hair videos on YouTube. So it was like early YouTube.
Doing hair.
It was early YouTube, 2006, 2007. So the girls were not as good as they are now.
Nor was the lighting.
Nor was the lighting, nor was the camera. Nothing was as good as it is today.
Yes.
But I used to watch a lot of videos, and my sister, who was in California, one night we were talking, and we were like, oh, we should start a YouTube channel. But this, again, before Zoom, before I could even like fathom how the two of us would be on the channel at the same time. And then I kept saying, like, well, what would we even talk about? And so the conversation ended, and then one night I was lying in bed, and I was like thinking about a lot of things, and thought came to me, like, how I've been able to progress with my money goals. So, like, before I went to grad school, I wanted to move out of my house, and I was able to save about $13,000 maybe in, like, a year and a half, and I was only making $24,000. And I thought about the fact that, like, whenever I have a money goal, I'm usually focus on reaching that goal. If I don't have a goal, then I'm just spending. But once I have a goal, I'm focused. And so the name Focus Spender popped into my head. And literally the next day, I just opened my Mac because I just got a new computer, and I just turned on iMovie. And then I started talking about my Total Money Makeover Dave Ramsey experience, because at the time, I wasn't seeing any financial videos. Now, the market's oversaturated. Like, people that started yesterday have like 5 million views, and I'm like, wait, what about me?
Yeah. So, same goes for the traders.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a whole other conversation.
So So that's how I got started. So when I did my first video, I did two videos, and then I just emailed it to my friends, and nobody laughed. Everybody was like, oh, this is good. And so people kept asking me, like, oh, when are you going to do another video? When are you going to do another video? And so then I started doing more and more videos. That's pretty much how Focus Fundraise got started. Like, it was no business. I just literally wanted, I also like being on camera. Even though I've never wanted to be like a television star, I just like talking on camera. So I was like, oh, this is like a fun little hobby where I can share something I know and I can, like, you know, make videos about something. So that's how I got started.
Amazing. So when did you start the project?
YouTube? A long time ago. So I think, I was done with grad school. It was 2012.
For a little minute.
Yes, I have. But I feel like my first, 6 years was pretty inconsistent. Some years I would have 5 videos. Some years I would have 1. Some years I would have 8. And only like in the last 2 years or so, that's when I've like tried to be very consistent and like put out a video. If not weekly, then at least every other week, because, people, there's a lot to be shared. And so I just want to make sure that I'm sharing what I know.
Well, let's take this time to share one of maybe your most impactful stories or a turnaround story, just so that people can, hear another story of what they related to.
About myself or about somebody else?
Someone else.
Well, one time, I remember one day I was on Instagram and somebody tagged me in a post and they basically took a picture of a calculator, and like the number was said like 56,000, 015. And I was like, what is this? And why did they tag me in the post? And then when I read the post, they said like, oh, this is the number that I had in student loan debt before I found the Focus Spender. And then I started watching all of her videos and now I'm debt free. And that, I think that was the moment when I was like, wow, people are actually listening to what I have to say and like they're following my advice. So I think that was one of my best feeling moment.
Well, that's a great story. You want to hear one of my stories?
Okay.
So I was on your site.
Oh, really? I didn't think it was going to involve me.
No. Surprise. So I was on your site, and I was kind of going through your blog and stuff like that. And one of the blog posts that I really liked was, because I have my retirement account at Vanguard. And so you actually had, this is how you set it up at Vanguard.
Yes.
And I shared that actually with a coworker. And lo and behold, she took action on what you shared and was able to start her Roth IRA.
That's amazing. It's so funny when I did that video. Sometimes you make videos and you're like, is anybody even watching? And that was one of those videos. I knew when I put it up that it was going to be crickets for a while. And then eventually people were like, oh, I'm looking to start a Vanguard portfolio. And, here it is. So I'm really glad I did it, even though for a long time I was like, nobody is even watching this. But it's definitely, sometimes you just need to see other people do something so that you can figure out how to do it for yourself.
Yes. And, that's why you're doing what you're doing. And that's exactly why we're doing what we're doing, to bring on people to share their investing story. Because I think even subconsciously, it helps a lot of people to just get started wherever they're starting, whether it's saving first before they even open up that account or, like you mentioned, have those type of goals to work towards and then realize, oh, wow, this is actually changing my life for the better.
Exactly. So my dad is a math teacher, and, math has always been my favorite subject in school. And sometimes I think when I decided that I really wanted to invest is when I – or, manage my money better is when I realized that money is math. Like, especially if you're making a salary that you can support yourself, if you're just doing the mathematics of it, everything should work out. It just requires pre-planning, but everything should work out.
Yeah, I want to also make sure we ask the audience on Facebook and also in Zoom if they have any questions or would like to make any comments so we can share those comments, because the information you're providing is invaluable. And because this is an evergreen program, we want to make sure that any listener
is able to ask their questions. And I see a lot of dialogue going. We want to also ask everybody, please like this program. Please share it, and please go to Camilla's YouTube and also subscribe, right?
Yes, definitely.
And we want to do a commercial for Better Investing. So, Ione, you want to tell everybody about what's happening with our South Florida chapter of Better Investing?
I'll let you tell it.
Well, Ione is our vice president of our South Florida chapter of Better Investing. As you can see, she's very modest, but she is kicked off for the first time in the history of our club, a model investment club. She's also wrapping up a summer stock market game, and actually, the capstone was yesterday, and I don't want to give away the surprise for our local students, but it is phenomenal for young people. And we're talking about junior high school students, high school students, and we actually have some parents on the program with us today. Actually, Miss Blackburn and her kids, and it might be a good idea to just have one of them come on, Ione, at some point in the program and talk about the power and impact it has had in their families, because, you know, every week you give us a shout-out of someone, and so we're anticipating and expecting to see who you're going to shout-out and give a shout-out to this week on the show, because they're always surprised to know it's them. So, again, we are also members of the Better Investing Organization nationally, and right now they are offering, or I say we are offering on behalf of the national, a 90-day free membership. So if you go to betterinvesting.org, and we'll make sure we put that information in the Facebook page and also in this Zoom chat, but betterinvesting.org, you can get a 90-day free membership. And again, we're all volunteers, so we're not selling anything to you. And as you heard from Camilla's story, everybody has an investing story. It's just that, you know, we've made a commitment to come and share some of those stories with you. So with that, Camilla, back to you and Ione.
So I will take this opportunity because sometimes I get tired of saying the same thing every week, but because it's you, Camilla, I'm going
to. Okay.
I'm going to tell you what we did this summer, and so, and on the show live right now, we have some wonderful adult advisors who serve the program, but also had their kids involved. So shout out to Jada Williams, shout out to Felicia Williams. And of course, special shout out to Cindy and Makita, my best financial friends. But anyway, this summer we did a 10-week program focusing on communities of color, specifically kids, giving them the opportunity to manage a $100,000 portfolio.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So we had a 10-week curriculum. It was already laid out. By one of the a professor emeritus of economics from the University of Wisconsin. I even walked some kids through the 10-week curriculum, and it was just wonderful. I mean, the videos were there, the discussion questions were there, and last night we had the capstone event where, you know, the students were able to come on and showcase what they learned, what they experienced, and also the advisors did it as well. And as you may already know, this was for, I'm going to say, 99% of the people, student and adult, their first time being exposed to investing at all. Learning about the curriculum, having money to try out their strategy, learning what do you need to click the buy button, how many shares of Apple, how many shares of Amazon, you know, and I think just the whole process of going through the motion of buying stock, watching that stock over time, having to be faced with the decision of should I sell it? It's gone up. I'm scared. You know, a lot of things have come out of that, and over the next few weeks, I plan to connect with the adults and the kids, because I think that a lot of the emotions around the money also came out.
Mm-hmm.
There were only two requirements of the game. You needed to, in a 10-week period of time, make 3 trades.
Okay.
And invest at least $70,000.
Okay.
Not all the clubs did that.
Really? It's not even real money.
But you said it because you're comfortable with money.
Yeah.
And I said the same thing until I got the results and was like, that's why. So realizing that this game, I think, touched things that were much deeper. Number one, who's ever seen $100,000?
Yeah.
You know, in one account or period, you know, and then to be given the kind of responsibility or really actually the freedom to make decisions. And like you said, it's play money. What was holding you back from trying, being afraid to make a mistake or seeing this as, let me get this right over here so that when I come to my real money, I'll know what to do. So I think for me, more than what I expected, it brought out a lot of other things that I want to unpack or be willing to sit with our community to get to the root of that and continue to over time provide those opportunities to just get more familiar with money, more comfortable with money, because as you may know, with the focus spender and just probably in your friend group, it's not just money for some people.
No, and I'm glad you said the thing about like people being afraid to make mistakes. I've definitely made mistakes in my investing history. Like I remember when Netflix was first the thing. And I would get the DVDs, and I loved them. I said, oh, you should invest in Netflix. So I bought maybe 10 or 12 shares for $30. That's all it cost at the time. It's like $700 now. I bought 30 shares. It went up, and then it went down to 20. And I was like, I can't lose this money. And so when it went back up to 40, I sold it. That was the dumbest thing I ever did. Because at some point, I realized if I could have just kept it, it was going to go up eventually. The company didn't go anywhere. But then I've also done things where I've bought stock in companies that, you know, tank. And it was like, when do you sell? When do you just bite the bullet? So it's never, there's no investor out there who buys and only sells high. Like, everyone is going to make a mistake. I guess the question is, you should, like, making sure you go in with a plan, like, all right, if it goes up this much, I'm going to sell it, or if it goes down, you know, this much, I'm going to wait this amount of time before I sell it. Just thinking about what your plan is before you go in, because that's the one thing I see with new investors is that they get so scared so fast that the second it drops a dollar, they want to sell. I'm like, but you don't want to sell when it's going down. You want to sell when it's going up. So,
yeah, I want to also suggest, too, that that's one of the reasons why we volunteer with Better Investing, because the education side is what we're discussing. And same thing like what Ione is saying about the kids. And as we help introduce them to better investing at an early age, which Ione was introduced at a very early age to the idea and to the organization of Better Investing, which helps her education, all of us, and being involved in investment clubs and just having access to the tools. And so I'm glad you said that, because we really want to continue to encourage all of our listeners. Please go to betterinvesting.org and practice on the tools. It's free. And if you decide you want to continue, your membership is less than $100 for a year. I mean, you cannot make a better investment in yourself. And I think actually Warren Buffett says it well when he says, you know, the best investment we can all make is in ourselves.
I was actually going to say the exact same thing, just a little differently. Going off exactly what you just said, that's why education becomes so important, because having, I think when we look at our actions and what we're really afraid of, our worldview and our relationship with time comes out. If you had gone into Netflix or into investing with a 40-year time horizon, then the little minute daily ups and downs, or even the up and then back down, it would have meant something totally different. And so I also want to take this opportunity to invite you to become a better investing member, because I think with all of the work that you've done thus far and all that you have learned, a better investing really is still one of the best kept secrets. Everybody knows Warren Buffett, but better investing really provides you the tools of how to do fundamental analysis, buy growth stocks at a value price, and have a 5, 10, 20, 30-year time horizon. One of my early mentors, we had him early on the show, and Ellis Traub, and he's like 88 years old. Mm-hmm. But he started investing at 50.
Wow.
So for some people that feel like, oh, I'm too young, and we've had a guest on the show, not a guest, but a participant on the show that was listening in that once asked the question, I'm 50, is it too late for me? And it's not, you know. But again, if you only maybe see yourself to 60 or 65, then, you know, the relationship to time is different, and so your relationship to money is going to be different. And so with that, again, I do want to invite you to try out Better Investing, become a member, because I think that the knowledge, the information that we provide will take your investment education to the next level. But I do want to ask this next question, which is, how has investing changed your worldview?
How has it changed my worldview?
So, or even what type of goals now do you have since you've been investing?
So I should say one of the reasons why I really wanted to start investing is because I live in New York City, and New York City, I live in Brooklyn. Brooklyn is expensive. Transportation. It wasn't even that expensive.
2012, when they put that Barclays.
Barclays messed everything up. Like, I love it. I love passing it. But, you know, New York has just gotten tremendously expensive. And, you know, everybody, Dave Ramsey included, it's like, you have to buy a house. You have to buy a house because that's the only way you're going to build wealth. I don't particularly want to leave New York City. Like, I know I can live someplace else with a cheaper cost of living, but I love where I'm from. I love my neighborhood. I love everything about living here. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, so I can't buy a house, so then I can't build wealth. That doesn't make any sense to me. So what else can I do to, you know, grow my wealth without just buying a house? And so that's honestly how I decided to start investing. And so I try and tell that to other people, because people all the time, they think the only way you can build wealth is through home ownership. And I still want to buy a house. So not to say that, you know, no one should go out and buy a house, but it's like people have to understand that there's other ways to build wealth. So I think maybe that's how it expanded my worldview.
Okay. And what are some of your new money goals, money and investing goals that you've set since you knocked debt out the park?
Definitely to buy a house. And so eventually I'm going to have to leave New York City, because, you know, you get a $700,000 house and you get 500 square feet. So it's like there is that trade-off where you want the space if you want all of that. But so that's one of my goals. And then thinking about, like, when I want to retire, I honestly don't know how young I want to retire. So for my day job, I work as a financial manager with charter schools and nonprofits, and I love what I do. And so for me, it's like, if I didn't like my career, then I think my main goal would be to retire young, but I really enjoy what I do. So that really isn't my goal. However, I do know that I don't want to work 40, 50 hours a week for the rest of my life. So it's like, okay, well, at some point, I want to have my nest egg.
I want to work 10, 20 hours a week, and then I'm good. And so, like, whenever I have kids, I want to make sure that they are set up for the rest of their lives. And I want to make sure that they're set up and the generation behind them is set up. So, like, I don't have to worry about anyone that's coming after me being in the poorhouse ever again, because I've set everything up so that they're taken care of.
I think you make a really good point, and it's something that usually we don't get a chance to talk about, because we I think it only comes with a certain level of freedom, right? One thing that privilege or wealth gives you is time to think.
Yes.
Usually, you know what I mean? You're just trying to make it from one day to the next, from one job to the next, and so the time it takes to strategize, you just don't have it. And, you know, it's going to your point about you may not want to invest early. One thing that I realized, because I think I'm going to invest early, but I'm not invest, but retire early. But I realized that in me striving to retire early, my definition of retiring is different now.
Exactly.
You know, so I shot for, I don't want to wait till 65. I want to do it at 40, right?
Yeah.
But now it's, what if retirement really is, I want to work where I want to work without having to take how much I'm getting paid into account?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think that's exactly, you know, what you're talking about, being able to have that freedom and the resources to work the type of I won't say job, but the type of cause you want to, or fulfill the need you want to fulfill, without having to say, but it's not paying me $80,000. I can't touch
it. Yeah. I remember years ago, I worked at this nonprofit, and one of my coworkers, I did the salary. So he had left his corporate.
Wait, you did what again?
I did the payroll at the time.
Oh,
so
cool.
I knew. So I like set up his HR stuff. So I already do his salary, and I remember talking to him like, "Why did you leave your corporate attorney job to take a 50% pay cut?" And so what he said was, you know, he studied law, he had all the student loan debt, hated law, needed to pay off the debt, so he just worked as a corporate attorney. And the second he was done paying off his loans, he said enough, and then he came and he worked with us instead. So I think it definitely, like, financial freedom gives you that freedom to, like, really do what it is you want, where you're not focused on making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars because it's like, I have to do this, and this is the only way I'm going to be able to support my lifestyle. So that always is in the back of my mind. Now, can you just repeat my favorite phrase, financial freedom? Financial freedom. It's very important. It really, really, honestly, since I've paid off my student loans, like, when people talk about, like, well, who are you going to vote for president? If you vote, well, this is, like, I'm thinking, like, Elizabeth Warren time and Bernie Sanders, and when they were talking about student loans, that wasn't even a factor in my head. Like, who's going to forgive student loans? I mean, it'd be great, but I didn't even have to factor that in when it came time thinking about who I'm going to vote for president, because that wasn't even a thing in my head at that point.
Wow, that's amazing. So really my last question, or two-part question, is what is the number one book that you would recommend for a beginner investing to read? And what's the one thing you would recommend that a new person wanting to invest to do in order to get started?
So the book recommendation on investing, that is a hard one. Because I can't recommend Total Money Makeover because it's not an investing book. But honestly,
let's do that one. Because, you're coming from let's do a financial book. It doesn't have to be investing.
I still think Total Money Makeover. I know a lot of people don't like Dave Ramsey because he is a bulldog. But it really just gave me a different perspective on what my life could be like. If I had just picked up a book about how to invest, I don't think I would have gotten out of student loan debt. I don't think I would have made that my focus. I really don't think I needed something to, like, shift the way I was thinking. And that book really shifted my whole mindset about money. So that would be my advice. That would be my book recommendation. And then in terms of second question was like where to get started for a new investor.
Mm-hmm.
I always say start, if your job offers a retirement plan, start there. Start there. Invest to the match if you do nothing else. Then after that, you can open up, you know, a Roth IRA or traditional after IRA. And then after that, if you want to start buying individual stocks, you can do that. But start with the retirement accounts, because that way your money is growing either tax-free or tax-deferred. You're getting all that tax benefits. You're securing your future. So that is where I would start, your retirement account. It doesn't, it's not sexy, I know, but it really is where you need to start.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Ayana, before we wrap up, I just want to give a shout-out to Aida Smith. She posted she just subscribed to your YouTube channel.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and she said that there's some amazing videos here, so we want to thank you so much for that. And then we had a question from a young man asking about Nationwide, and so I directed him to the website, Terrence Baker. Oh, Terrence, okay. His question was, is Nationwide a good investment company when going through a deferred compensation? So I'm not sure if either one of you want to answer that question.
I don't think I can answer that question. I don't think I can answer.
Nationwide, the insurance company?
That's what I thought. Like, I thought he meant like purchasing insurance, but
I don't know if he's saying buying the stock of Nationwide or buying insurance. I'm not sure. But if you are talking about buying the stock of Nationwide, I would say if you're not a BI member, become a better investing member. If you don't want to pay right now, sign up for the 90-day free trial and do an SSG on Nationwide. The website will tell you what an SSG is. I won't tell you that. You'll have to find that out. But the stock selection guide allows you to study any stock that's public, basically. So use that to do your own research and come up with your own analysis and make the decision for yourself.
And come back next week and tell us what you found. All
so
right.
You have one comment in the chat. I want to read this to you. Thanks, Camilla. You have given me a lot to think about and plan for. I'm looking forward to viewing your YouTube channel. So
Thank you. I hope you enjoy it.
I think everybody will, because I think, you know, between written content and video content, you really break it down for us and keep us engaged. And it's a wonderful start. So I want to thank you so much for your time. Tell Dr. Keisha I said
yes.
Thank you for sharing.
I will.
Found you on her podcast. So.
Oh, yes. She told us. She might be listening because she actually texted me this morning, like, oh, I see what you're doing tonight. So
uh-huh.
I'm on here right now.
So shout out to Dr. Keisha and our Virginia Tech little creative collaborative thing. So with that, again, we really appreciate your time and sharing your story. And
thank you.
It was phenomenal.
I
had so much fun. So
me too. Thank you for having me. It was a great time. I had a great time tonight.
Yes.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, we just want to let everybody know that on behalf of Better Investing Organization, Ione and I are Better Investing volunteers. Better Investing was established in 1951 and is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. And the organization has helped over 5 million people learn how to invest and how to analyze stocks by utilizing the Better Investing tools and the resource volunteers have created. And so with that, we want to thank you, Camilla.
I have one thing.
Pardon me?
You said, I have one last thing.
What is it?
Thank Camilla again at the end. But
saying this one last thing.
I'm always coming back with something else.
Go ahead, Ayumi.
So the Georgia chapter of Better Investing is having their 3-day investor fair, a 6th annual investor fair. So tomorrow evening, Friday evening, and Saturday afternoon, they have free sessions, investing sessions for the beginners, the intermediate, and even some experts. What I love about one of the sessions, which I've signed up for, is investing for women between 40 and 60.
Okay.
And so there is going to be great. The link is in the chat. I'll email you, Camilla. But if for anybody wants an introduction or understand more about the quality of education, investment education that Better Investing provides, please go to betterinvesting.com, find the Georgia chapter. And
Investing.org.
I'm sorry. You're right. Betterinvesting.org. Find the Georgia chapter, and the 6th annual investor fair information will be there if you can't access the link right here in the chat. I do want to shout that out because that only happens once a year, and it's starting tomorrow. So with that being said, thank you, Camilla.
Thank you. All right, and we're going to ask Michelle, if you can put those links in the Facebook post, please, so that those individuals who may see this later tonight or tomorrow, they can still register so they don't have to be concerned about trying to get into the chat here. So now, as they say in that other place, all minds and hearts are clear. Okay. All right. With that, Camilla, again, thank you so very much. We really enjoyed the show tonight, and we're going to all subscribe to your YouTube. Can you just give a shout out again for your YouTube channel so people who are listening later can find it?
Yes, called Focused Spender. So FOCUSED Spender. And if you just go to YouTube.com and type that in, I'll pop right up.
All right. Thank you so very much. And thank you also, Michelle and Doretha, Laverne, everybody that made this possible. Don, everybody, thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.